Coming up tonight will be the Megillah reading, and after the Purim will be Parshas Kitisa, so we'll try to get a little bit of both in there today. Beginning of the Megillah, so the Jewish people are finding themselves in Ahasuerus' palace in Shushan, and there's a huge feast going on. The Megillah described that during this feast, Ahasuerus brought out all of his finest. Every one of the senses was catered to sights, beautiful smells. They did it in the garden for beauty. And for the food, of course, was delicious. And then in Pasuk Ches, the 8th Pasuk of the Megillah, it says, Hashtiyah kidas einanes. The drinking was according to the law, without coercion. And nobody forced you into it. Kichen yisad amelech al kol rav beito. For so the king had ordered on all the officers of his house, la'asot kirtzon ish va'ish, to do according to every man's pleasure. So the Belzerov said that over here you have a remez into the Bechir HaChofshes element of man's life. Kichen yisad amelech, this is what the king had ordered, the king being HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a tradition that often in the Megillah when it says Melech, we're talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has yisad, not just ordered, but yesod, meaning already from the foundation, from the creation of the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has put it in, that la'asot kirtzon ish ve'ish. Everyone has the ability to do as his desire. The Medrash tells us that la'asot kirtzon ish ve'ish, ish is Haman and ish is Mordechai. It says in the Megillah, Ish Yehudi Hayav Shushan Abira, in reference to Mordechai. And it says also in the Megillah later on, when Esther exposes Haman, she calls him an Ish Sorer. She calls him an Ish. So we see that Ish could be referred to Mordechai, or an Ish can refer to Haman. And that is the Bechir HaChofshes. The Bechir HaChofshes is La'asos Kiritzon Ish Va'ish. You can do as you please. Right, Kiritzon Ish Va'ish. You can choose, if you're so inclined, to be Mordechai, to raise up your service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to keep bad in your former Shivisa Hashem L'negdi Tamid, to be a real Yehudi, an Ish Yehudi, or you can choose, if you are so inclined, Rahman al-Litzlan, to be a Haman, to be that type of Ish. The choice is yours, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not get involved. Okay? In the second parak, when we're introduced to Mordechai, so it says that Mordechai was an Ish Yehudi Yabi Shushan Abira, Ushmo Mordechai, Ben Yair, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish, Ish Yemini. It was a Jewish man in Shushan, his name was Mordechai, he was the son of Yair, the son of Shimi, the son of Kish, and then it says Ish Yemini. What does Ish Yemini mean? Literally it means that he was, correct, from Shevet Ben Yamin. That is for sure the pshat. He was from Shevet Benjamin. They trace you back to his Shevet. However, and this really could be developed for an hour, literally, the connection between Megillah, Esther, and Eretz Israel, even though it happens in Shushan, it is so deep and so profound how much of Mordechai and how much of the Megillah as a whole is anchored around Eretz Israel. Right? As is evident by the fact that we read the Megillah and Shushan Purim in all walled cities from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun, not from the time of Shushan. Again, there's a lot of Eretz Yisrael in the Megillah, but in just this one line, even Ish Yemini, Sir Rav Rivlin, the Mashiach of KBY, he said that perhaps this Ish Yemini is a reference to Mordechai's great love for Yerushalayim. The pasuk says, Im Eshtachech Yerushalayim, Tishkach Yemini. Let my right hand be forgotten. And that's also nowadays a Matisyahu song, I believe. And the point is that this was Mordechai. Mordechai was an Ish Yemini, a man that although he was living in Galus, was always, always thinking about Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim was always on his mind. Right? You are not necessarily tied down to the place where you are. You are tied down to the place where you are thinking of that. Where your thoughts are, where you want to be, that is where you belong. That's a little bit of physics, but in Mehagola, even when you're in the Gola, you can be an Ish Yemini. You can be an Ish of Imeshtachet Yerushalayim, Tishkach Yemini. Think back to Eretz Yisrael, and eventually the Yeshua will come. One more word from the Megillah. Why not? We'll go to the end. Haman is very, very upset. The reason why Haman is very upset is because Mordechai refuses to bow down to him. So finally, he consults with his wife, with Zeresh, and he says, "This is ridiculous." He says, "Kol ze'einenu shaveli." This is in Parakeh, the end of Parakeh, Pasuk Yud Gimel. He says, "All of this honor, all of this, you know, being top advisor to the king, being invited, the only one to be invited to the feast tomorrow with the king to Esther's house, it's me. I am all that. But none of that is worth it. Kol ze'einenu shaveli." B'chol erev sh'ani rov et Mordechai ha'Yehudi. Every time I see Mordechai ha'Yehudi. So what does his wife tell him? She says, "I understand your plight, so get rid of Mordechai." V'tomer lo Zeresh ishto. Zeresh says, "Yasu eitz gavoa chamishim amah." 12 eitz, 50 amas. That's very, very tall. It's close to 150 feet. Close to 100 feet. And then she says, "Emor lamelech ve'idlu et Mordechai alav." Tell the king, right, and have them hang Mordechai on it. Speak to it. So Hashem Yishmael points out that this is a not pasuk. What does that mean? Emor lamelech, tell the king. When you're speaking to a king, you don't tell the king anything. You could ask the king. The word should be Ubakesh mi'amelech. Ask from the king to hang Mordechai. You can't. I'm telling you to hang Mordechai. What kind? Who are you to tell Haman to do anything? Haman is the king. How can that be? Says the Shem Yishmael, Alpi Midrash. There's a few Midrashim that seem to suggest that, in fact, Haman had the type of persuasion powers over Akashverosh that he really was a more Elamelech. Whatever he would tell the king would do. Right? There's a Midrash that goes as far as to say that Achashverosh used to bow down to Haman as well. Everyone bowed down, including Achashverosh. Why is all that significant? So says the Shem Yishmael, we know that how does the Megillah end? The Megillah ends with the V'nahafochu. Everything was turned around. Meaning at the end of the Megillah, Mordechai HaYehudi got Haman's position. Which means that at the end of the Megillah, Mordechai HaYehudi was in this level of Emor El HaMelech, telling the king. Says the Shem Yishmael that we have to recognize that on Purim, during this time, when the V'nahafochu happened, if we link in, tap in to our Yehudi, to the Mordechai HaYehudi that is in all of us, then we too will have the power to be a more El HaMelech. We'll be able to be a more El HaMelech. Right? Obviously not a Melech HaKashverosh, but Melech, as we said, is an allusion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we're a real Yehudi on Purim, we have the ability to be a more El HaMelech, to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu what we want. Not just to ask, but to tell. The Gemara says that Kol HaPosh, if you have anyone that sticks out his hand on Purim, you have to give him something. This is deeper. On Purim, if you're a Yehudi, then you have the ability to be a Emor LaMelech. Okay, that's just a couple of nice words in the Megillah. And we'll go a little bit to Parshas Kitisa and see where that takes us. Okay. Let's see what we got. Parshas Ki Tisa. Parshas Ki Tisa speaks with the census. Starts with the census, right? Ki Tisa Yosh Bnei Yisrael Ifkudem. When you take a census of the children of Israel, Venadnu Ishkofer Nafshol Hashem.
Right, the machatzis a shekel. Each person will give half a shekel, and then when you tally up the total amount of shekelim that you have, you'll know how many people you have in Klal Yisrael. You are not supposed to tally up the people straight up by counting them 1, 2, 3, but rather you are supposed to do it in a roundabout way. In fact, David HaMelech in Malachim, in Perek Tafalef, he conducts a census, and for that he is punished. He counted the people straight up, according to some opinions over there. And because he counted the people straight up, the Gemara in Brachos, I think, yeah. Because he counted the people straight up, he was punished. So the question is, what is so bad about counting the people directly? What's so bad about a census that we must do a machatzis a shekel, or the old people walk into a minyan or a Hashia es hamecha uvarach es nachal asecha urem v'nasa? Why do you do that? Why don't you just count them straight up? What's so bad? There's that famous joke of how many people do you need for a minyan? 15. Why? Hashia es hamecha uvarach es nachal asecha urem 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 v'nasa. Something like that. Anyway, so why is it that you don't count directly? Many answers given. The beautiful place to look is the Or HaChaim in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. But just one answer right now, and that is that if you count the people, you may fall under the false assumption that there is strength in numbers. You have to recognize that the strength of the Jewish people is not a strength in numbers. It is not because we are many that we will succeed or not succeed. It is not because we are many that God will love us or not love us. Right? Don't be fooled by the numbers. Each individual is granted a love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is an unconditional love. It is not the fact that we are many. And therefore we never want to count, because we never want to give the impression that the number is what matters. It's the quantity, not the quality of the Jewish people that matters. And that is why we don't like to count. And we don't like people to count, because it gives you a false sense of hope and security. Okay, Machatzis HaShekel. What was the Machatzis HaShekel used for? So the Machatzis HaShekel was used for the Korbanos Tzibur, for the public sacrifices that were brought in the Beis HaMikdash. For example, the Korban Tamid that was brought on a daily basis, the Olas Tamid, that's a Korban Tzibur. So that daily sacrifice was sponsored and paid for by the Machatzis HaShekel. There was a debate in the Gemara that whether or not a individual can choose to donate that day's Korban Tamid. Say, you know what, don't take the money from the public funds. Here you go. I'll pull out my wallet and I'll pluck down the $500 it costs for the animal today. Can I do that? So the Tzdukim, they felt like, of course you can do it. And the Purshim, right, Chazal, who we go right, they believe that no, an individual cannot, an individual cannot give the Korban Tzibur. It has to come from the Tzibur. So what's this machlokus all about? So Rav Kook has a beautiful explanation of this machlokus. It's a really beautiful piece. You can look at it in Ma'amrei HaRa'aya on Shavuos. But we'll just give the tip of the iceberg. Rav Kook said that the real debate over here between the Tzdukim and the Pusha was, what is a community? So Rav Kook says that they had a debate about what is a community. The Tzdukim assumed that what is a community? A community is a collection of individuals and nothing more, right? The individuals want to maximize their own individual rights, but they know that the way to maximize their own individual rights is by making a community. But the community is basically there to serve the individual. And as such, since the community is basically made up of individuals and to serve the individuals, the Tzedukim found it totally conceivable that you should be able to have an individual donate the Korban Tamid. However, the Prushim understood that it's not like that. The community, Klal Yisrael, the Tzibur of Klal Yisrael, is not just a matter of a collection of individuals. It's a new entity. A Tzibur, you know, made up of, by the way, the word Tzibur is Tzadikim, Beinonim, Rishayim, made up of all types of individuals, the righteous and the less righteous, and those that might even be quoted as Rishayim, together make up a new entity. They're a new, stronger type of reality that didn't exist before. When you link in with everyone else, it's not just, oh, we're a bunch of individuals. Now we're Klal Yisrael, and together there's a lot more that can be accomplished. This notion of striving together to create a tzibur, that is what's represented by machatzis shekel. That is why we only give a machatzis shekel, half a shekel, not a whole shekel, to represent that on your own you are not as strong as you are when you're part of a community. You're only half. Okay. The word machatzis, by the way, has a cute hint to the mitzvah of tzedakah. If you take the tzadik in the middle of the word, that tzadik represents tzedakah, and you'll notice that the outside letters are mem and tav. The farther away you are from tzedakah, you are meis. But the letters inside of the tzadik, the closer you are to the tzedakah, you are chai. Excuse me. Okay, we're back. So the machatzis shekel represents this notion of being incomplete. As an individual, we're not as strong as we are when we are part of a tzibur. And as we said, tzibur is a tzadik beinoni rasha. There's one more inyan that resembles this, and that is by the Ketores. The Ketores, as you know, had 11 samamanim, and the Torah doesn't tell us all of them. It just says four. The rest are learned down halacha Moshe Messina from Chazal. But one of them was Chelbana. What was Chelbana? Chelbana was an awful smelling spice. But when taking that awful smelling spice and mixing it together with the rest of the ingredients of the Ketores, of the frankincense, then it made for a beautiful combination, and the smell was delicious. If you can say that about smells, I believe. The smell was delicious. What's the significance of that? The significance of that is by a tzibur as well. Oftentimes as a tzibur, you might have individuals that standing on their own may seem a little bit less desirable. But the truth is that even those less desirable elements brought together as part of a tzibur are unique and special. There's a power to a tzibur that you just cannot attain on your own. This beautiful Meister by Wine tells, he was one time davening at the Grosh Tzibur in Shaarei Chesed. And he went in there for Marv, and he was waiting for Marv to begin. And they were waiting for Minyan. That's the way it works at a Minyan factory. Like, you just wait until 10 individuals walk in. So he counted, there were 7, then there were 8, then there were 9, and they were holding by 9 for a long time. And Baruch Wine was looking around the room, and he noticed that one of the individuals at these 9 was none other than Gadol Hador of Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Shlomo Zalman Orbach is a huge tzaddik, tremendous Talmud Chacham. Like we said, the Gadol Hador, Maran Shokol Beis Yisrael. He was the king of Klal Yisrael. He was the Malkut of Bnei Yisrael. And here they were waiting for a minute. And Baruch Wine tells that he started to put 2 and 2 together. So this is amazing. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach needs a minyan. He cannot daven right now. He knows more Torah than probably all of Yerushalayim combined. His chasadin, his tzidkus, is unparalleled. You know, in his pinky, he contains more than football fields of people. You know, and yet he needs a minyan. So if the next person to walk in here was a individual who is nominally from, you know, normally doesn't put on this kippah, but was just looking for a kaddish tonight for whatever reason, that 10th individual would count for the minyan as much as Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Right? There is just a power to a tzibur that you cannot achieve on your own. It doesn't matter how great you are and what, how wonderful you are. And it doesn't matter that the tzibur is not made up of righteous people like you. No. The minute you have a tzibur, it takes off a life of its own. It's bigger than just the individual parts. The whole is larger, the sum is larger than the parts. And that is what we learn out from the Machatzis HaShekel and from the Torah. Okay. One last idea. Seems like we haven't been good to this now. Seems like Shemi's okay. Cooperating. Okay. One last idea. We'll have to get to Shabbos next time. Okay. Torah tells us that the chief architect in charge of the building of the Mishkan was none other than a person by the name of Bezalel. Right? So the way the Torah introduces him is the following. Hashem tells Moshe in Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Beis, Re'eh karati b'shem Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur. God says to him, see, behold, I have called Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur. He tells him, see, behold. And in fact, in Parshas Vayakel, when Moshe introduces Bezalel to the people, he again says, Re'u, behold, Kara Hashem b'shem Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur. Behold, God called Bezalel to lead the service of the Mishkan, to be the chief architect. The question is, what's this Re'eh? Why can't it just say, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe, Karati b'shem Bezalel? Why does he say, Re'eh, see that I have called? And again to the Jewish people, behold, see that I've called. Why can't you say, listen, Jewish people, Bezalel is going to be in charge? What's to behold? So the Ramban has a beautiful explanation. The Ramban in both places, here and in Parshas Vayakel. The Ramban says that Bezalel was an anomaly. In what sense was Bezalel an anomaly? Bezalel was a slave that emerged out of Egypt. Now, normally, even not being a slave, right, simply living a regular life, it would be nearly impossible for any individual.
Sorry, Zach, you really need to go upstairs to.
It would be nearly impossible for any individual to achieve such levels of mastery in so many different forms of work. To be a master carpenter and a master weaver and a master goldsmith and a master coppersmith, it's hard enough to be a master of one discipline, but to master all of them is nearly impossible. That, coupled with the fact that he was a slave who likely did not have much chance to work with many of these expensive elements, is just incomprehensible. Right? So Elamai, what do you see from here? The only justification, the only explanation that we can offer for Bezalel being so talented is behold. Behold Bezalel. Clearly the way he has accomplished it is God-given talent. Right? There's a certain measure of talent that God gave him. And the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us, look at Bezalel, is because he wants to tell us, look, just like Bezalel, everyone else. Everyone is given exactly what it needs to accomplish their task. Bezalel is the ultimate proof. You might think, it's all up to me to train myself. Of course, the person has to do his ishtadlus, but the person has to recognize that God gives him what it needs to succeed. As Rav Mordechai said in Friday night, Shasali Kol Tzarchi. Whatever I need, right, I have. Kol Tzarchi li, for myself, I have. And that is the lesson that you see from Bezalel. Bezalel is the ultimate proof that God gives to individuals. And the same way God gave to Bezalel, you have to recognize that God gave to you whatever it is that you need in order to be successful. Okay, I'm sorry for the jumpiness today. Bezrat Hashem, next week will be again in full force. And Parshas Vayakel. Okay, good job. It's been a critical point.